Time for another check-in with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for a weekly Tacky Talk update. How you doing, Tacky?
Hey, Joe. Good to see you again for another week. And as you can see, I'm on the road again.
Yep, you got the seat warmer on, I hope.
Well, I can turn the car engine off because otherwise you can't hear me talking. It's great to see you despite where we are. And again, you know, given the fact we're living in this kind of world, it seems like no matter where I am, you can somehow stay in touch.
There is no running. You can run, but you can't hide.
So I hope everyone is having a good snowy day. Today's Wednesday, the 9th, and we have had our first snowfall. I got an article yesterday from the Hartford Courant about energy prices, which I think everyone's now feeling for the first time as you get your gas and oil and electric bills.
Yes, funny you should mention that. Mine went up exactly $100 in 1 month.
Yeah, it's you're looking at, the impact of COVID on a global level and economies coming back online simultaneously altogether, plus the challenge of moving energy around the world. It's people competing, not people, but also companies and nations are competing for the current fuel supply. So I don't expect it's going to slow down for a bit as demand continues to rise.
Yeah, I was hoping that the president's decision to release some of the oil reserves would have a bigger impact, but doesn't look like it's going to do a whole great deal of good.
No, it doesn't appear to do a whole lot. As I kind of talked about last time, you know, he had to definitely do something. And, you know, you're going to see probably a small change in the pump in your fuel prices, but you know, I wouldn't expect a massive decline. U.S. is still the leader in fossil fuel providers. But, you know, again, you can only pump so much natural gas or frack or pump oil out of the ground at any moment. It isn't like it moves that you want more, you move faster. They only can get so much at a steady pace. And then it's just getting into the supply chain, so to speak, into the pipeline. But also, we know there's a massive shortage of truck drivers globally. It's not just a local issue at all. It's a global issue.
Yeah.
Of CDL licenses, CDL licensees is a shortage on a global level. It's not just here. You know, all countries are trying to figure out how to get people to want to be truck drivers on large vehicles. And you still got to get them trained and licensed. So there's a delay day if people want to get into that profession. But you can make some good money right now. And, you know, I'll give an example. Even the European Union, I mean, because of Brexit, you know, the British are not accepting truck driver's licenses from Europe and vice versa. And this is causing a major shortage because not everybody has dual licensing. So you need a British truck driver to pick up the truck once it goes over the border. And given the lack of drivers, generally speaking, you know, these kind of what people listen to call, oh, this is like common sense. It isn't common sense, right, regarding these type of things when you have discrepancies on licensing and transportation.
Yeah. It's one of the unintended consequences of Brexit. I'm sure they're realizing now.
Oh, absolutely. And it's like the people that are anti-NAFTA, right? You know, they don't want, you know, NAFTA, you know, NAFTA's bad, but it also involves transportation of goods and services, including our own driver's license on a personal level. You can use a master's driver's license in Canada, for example. Mm-hmm. So to how allow reciprocal license to transport goods is essential for moving our economy since we are a global economy. So, you know, I'm sorry to tell you all, folks, you know, you're going to have to weather this a little bit, no pun intended, about the energy prices. And again, I very much encourage people to look at masssave.com online and to look at other options at the hardware store, like, you know, to see what kind of energy efficiency items you can pick up, whether it be a new thermostat, whether it be more energy efficient light bulbs, whether to you know, get some what you call plastic wrap type sealants around your windows. You know, there are some, you know, relatively low cost devices, and also there's a lot of rebates going on things like, you know, smart thermostats. So, you know, people should take the opportunity, you know, now to see what's available. And you know, I know they're out there. So.
Yep. There's some energy assistance programs too. QCAP, the Salvation Army, the Good Neighbor Energy Fund, places like that can help you too if you qualify.
Oh, absolutely. You should all definitely look into those type of programs to try to taper some of your energy consumption, and also some common sense things like, you know, you're not using your phone, don't leave the phone charger in the wall. Take the phone charger off. The thing is still drawing a minute amount of power, but it adds to your electric bill. You got cordless phones in the home. If you still got a landline, you know, unplug the charger for a while. It can run on battery for half a day or even a full day. So, you know, just give it a break, so to speak. You know, maybe, you know, unplug the television completely so it's not in warm mode all the time. Right. Have a little longer to boot up. So if your TV show's coming on, you plug it back in, you give it a few extra minutes.
Yeah, all these things help and they add up quickly. You'd be surprised, but they definitely do, especially now with the energy costs even higher. They'll have a bigger impact if you conserve more.
Yeah, reduction of consumption is the best way to save money at this point.
Sure. What has been happening over the past week on Beacon Hill that we should know about, Jackie?
Not too much, to be honest with you. It's been very quiet. Week on Beacon Hill as we're kind of in the so-called holiday recess period in terms of no sessions. But my colleagues and myself were still running public hearings in the month of December. I'm getting pretty much every day a notice that the committees are coming up with public hearings. Obviously, all of them are in a video format. There's advanced sign-in sheets, so we can have some order in this advanced format. And we're approaching June 10, which is on February 2nd. Where bills have to get reported out. So, you know, we're rapidly approaching the requirement for committees to report bills to do something, right? Favorable, unfavorable, study orders, hold the bill, so forth and so forth. So as the chairs and co-chairs start to make some decisions about what to do during this time period, you know, the activity on hearings and executive sessions is going to pick up. And you know, in my own world, my committee, my staff and I have already gone through about 80% of my bills already in terms of the committee to do the recommendations to the Senate chairman. So the Senate chair will look at my recommendations and then provide a counteroffer, essentially, mm-hmm. on what she's interested in. And we'll continue that back and forth conversation right through the holidays.
Since last we talked, the legislature has passed the American Rescue Plan Act and sent it on to the governor. Were there any changes to it, notable changes that we should know about?
No, I call it the kitchen sink bill. I mean, everything that was in the sink definitely went into the bill. You know, it's a very rare opportunity. We actually have this much money that the both in Senate and House priorities, for the most part, were met, as well as pretty much everyone else is local projects. So every legislator that had local projects, more than likely did not, you know, got everything. Definitely the city of Quincy, given the strength of the delegation right now, got everything we asked for. So, I mean, we walked away with $2 million of earmarks, all one-time costs, all capital projects, because it's not a program bill. It's a one-time capital bill, yeah. A one-time program bill to address issues, address COVID or, you know, economic job stimulation or infrastructure improvements because they have to have done. I do remind folks that we do actually have more money in terms of road and bridge money. I know that we're hitting pothole season. It's the nature of New England winters, right? I mean, the roads get ripped up. So, you know, we did Chapter 90 money early this year. We did Chapter 90 money, so the city's getting that money already. Comes in two installments, one per year, but we'll also have Chapter 90 means road and bridge money.
Yep.
So we do at the beginning of every session $200 to $300 depending on our bond tolerance, because we actually stay will bond that money on in the town and city doesn't have to pay that money nor any interest. Statewide taxpayers pick up those costs. Well, we also have some more American Rescue Plan money, more ARPA money, and roads and bridges, that cash that we have available. And we'll probably discuss spending that next year. But we have the, you know, monster infrastructure bill that the feds passed, which I still don't know exactly what we can do with it and how much is coming to the discretion of the legislature. And some already pre-dedicated to services at the governor's level. So as we kind of sort that out, you know, maybe early part of next year, maybe by February, we'll have some clues, if not soon, about what the plan is. And of course, the governor's budget comes out the third Wednesday, or is it fourth Wednesday? It's the last Wednesday of January.
Yeah.
So I don't have the calendar in front of me, but the governor's budget's coming up too. So we'll see what the priorities the governors are, given the fact that his last year in governorship. And see what his approach is, his priorities as he prepares to, you know, leave office.
Yeah. Do you think he'll sign the ARPA bill? He was all hot on the legislature for not acting fast enough.
I would think he would. And, you know, at this point, I'd be a little bit surprised if he wipes out the earmarks in the bill. You know, as I like to say, it's a good time to play Santa. cities and towns. So the governor wants to, you know, send everyone a gift of cities and towns and local projects. I think he probably would leave it alone. In the past several sessions, especially the budget, it doesn't matter if it's a Democrat or Republican in the corner office, it's irrelevant, quite frankly. They've historically always vetoed earmarks as a as basically just a prevolutionary mentality that, you know, I'm the governor, I should dictate how the money goes. You just approve it, I'll do whatever I want. Right, earmarks is the legislature's balancing act against the governor saying, yeah, well, we're still the legislature, we can still dictate where money goes. But this governor, you know, has for the last two fiscal cycles, has really left our earmarks alone. He signed them into law. It's probably one of the governors that's going to have the least number of vetoes or light item vetoes and budgets in history, the way things are going. He knows that we have the numbers to override. Even Republicans vote against a Republican governor when their local interests are at stake. Yes. I mean, folks, people are not dumb enough to vote against self-preservation, right? So, well, that's not true. We have Congress. But anyways, it's true. I mean, every time I look at them, like, you guys really just want to keep shooting yourselves. So, you know, that's kind of the, you know, reality of it. And yeah. That's why I don't expect the governor to do any videos of earmarks and major projects unless he already has something in the works that's duplicative. And even then, we always will argue that it's truly duplicative.
Yeah, no sense in drawing out the inevitable, right? Just move it on.
Exactly. We will override.
Speaking of Washington, Rachel Rollins, now nominated and will be the next U.S. attorney for Massachusetts. What do you think?
Well, I'm sure somebody out there has a better congressional trivia than I have in terms of congressional trivia skills, but it's been a long time since I remember any appointee going to a 50-50 vote with the tiebreaker from the vice president as her role as Senate president. I had actually expected the possibility of one of the moderate or more conservative Republicans in a contested state with upcoming races next year to perhaps vote against Rachel Rollins' nominations because of her statements locally about how she perceives law enforcement. But, you know, she's up there. She'll be sworn in very quickly. Governor Baker gets to appoint the next Suffolk County District Attorney. Obviously, we're in Norfolk County. It doesn't really affect us politically or administratively. Unless somebody that's watching here ends up getting in trouble in Suffolk County, then, you know, obviously you go through the Suffolk County DA. But, I mean, the governor... again, is not looking towards his own political future. The choice he makes will be actually quite interesting about what he does. There has been a number of Democrats in Boston have supported governor's past campaigns. We know that's not necessarily unusual, that both political parties sometimes crisscross each other during governor's races.
Oh yeah, I mean, the mayor here in Quincy was one of the first to endorse this administration.
Exactly, so it's not necessarily unusual. With such a big Democratic state, these things will happen. So, well, we'll see what he does. I mean, there's I know that Linda Champion, I've seen her running around Boston a little bit, you know, seeing that she can run for re-election because he got appointed this year. I believe this is re-election year for that as well, for Suffolk DA. So it's going to be once they get in, you're going to be a very short-term incumbent. You're an incumbent, but not an incumbent because you actually have no time. You have to just get that DA race going. Right. So obviously an existing political person makes sense. They already have existing campaign accounts. They already have existing campaign accounts and name recognition and been on the ballot before. If you bring somebody up that actually has no political experience, has to build a campaign from scratch, now obviously everybody's going to challenge that person very quickly. But I mean, I know Michael Flaherty's name, the city councilor in Boston, has been bannered about. I said Linda Champion a minute ago, but I'm sure there's many other names beyond just those two I just mentioned that are in consideration. I have no clue who they are. But for certain names I'll cross off the list, like Lydia Edwards, for example, is running for state senate. You know, she's a city councilor, you know, that had a lot of rumor mill around her about DA, attorney general, so forth and so forth. Obviously, you know, you guys are familiar with these kind of like rumors until something happens. So I mean, she could have been one of those potential folks, but you know, she's running for state senate right now.
Sure. Yeah. Earlier this week, Jackie, the city council here in Quincy approved the revised redistricting maps and had some harsh words for the state because of that. What do you think about that?
I don't watch the city council meetings. You don't know why. I don't watch city council meetings. I mean, obviously, if they summon us to the council, we will. The people were forewarned going in that the House was definitely going to use census blocks as the way they're going to draw the maps. And the census blocks are not exactly like the precincts that city and towns are putting together. Secretary of State's office had made recommendations, again, the recommendations to follow railways, major roadways, rivers, other geographical natural landmarks as part of drawing district lines. You know, looking the map, you know, the clerk clearly tried to do the secretary's recommendations. I had my own opinions, but I'm not drawing these maps, right, about where things should go. I'm aware that there's been some tweaking here and there. I have not received a new map yet. One would think I should get one at some point. So I'll make a request for a new map, and then we'll see things are. One of the interesting things I brought up to my staff this week was that given the fact we're doing census blocks as opposed to district maps, you know, I have a constituent service database that, you know, I rent, you know, I lease a constituent database, which we put our constituent service information in, so my staff can share information easily about what the caseloads look like and who they are and where we are in open and closed constituent cases. But given the fact that we're not using a conventional system in terms of wards and precincts, we're waiting to see, you know, how they're going to adjust their computer system to ensure that I just don't have the whole city, but also identification of where the lines are between the three representatives. So, you know, there's a whole lot of other administrative ends associated with this. But, you know, I'm aware that some precincts got a little bit nipped on the edges here and there because of the census block. I have a hard time seeing like them making a whole lot of major changes.
Yeah, I think there's only one ward and precinct in Quincy that was split, so she may keep the rest intact.
Yeah, Ward 3, Precinct 2 had a little bit nip off in the Harvard Street area to make the numbers work.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just moving a few streets around. I think they just, you know, y'all know it was coming. I mean, this was not like it was not forewarned.
Well, it's really because of the delay in the 2020 federal census, right? That really sparked all this to begin with.
Yeah, just to remind folks, we talked about this before, but we normally get these numbers ready to us by sometime in April.
Mm.
And due to redistricting process through the summer months, and then and the city councilors can fight among themselves if you're a town, a board of selectmen. And then you can, you know, obviously we don't get involved in voting for these municipal lines, but, you know, we do have an opinion as well. And, you know, I never got to weigh in given the short time period on the district. So I didn't see a map to like 3 days before they voted in the first one. Again, I have no say in terms of a vote, but obviously I'm like all of you watching this, I'm entitled to my own opinions as well. And, because of the nature of how the census worked out and the problems of the federal government and the prior administration's inability to like be sensible as well as COVID. And we had to take more time to get counts in on a national level. It delayed everything and really made this particular redistricting messy. And people are now saying, well, why couldn't you wait to 2 years from now, which has been done, folks. I mean, you know, we've done things in the fourth digit, so to speak, of the year. On election cycles. It's because the Constitution did the voters vote for 20 years ago. Has it been 20? No, 10 years ago. You know, requires lines to be done by the second number of the year, meaning 22 in this case.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So prior to that, you know, 2024 would have been the normal process, but given the constitutional change, you know, we've been gummed up. And people are like, well, why'd you move it backwards? Well, technology makes it so much faster for us to do district lines. The days of crayons and maps, so to speak, are over.
Yeah, we just didn't anticipate there being a pandemic, that's all.
Pandemic, Washington turmoil, I mean, those are out of your and my control. It's stuff down there, and of course, the pandemic is out of our control. Yeah. So, unfortunately, this is the circumstance we have put in, and, you know, it's great that the council voiced their opinion, but you all know it was coming.
Speaking of the pandemic, why are the numbers going up so much? Tacky, what's your observation?
Well, obviously, there's been more breakthrough cases these days, infections. But I've heard from folks, I've not had breakthrough cases. Some cases, they've actually had a booster shot, but I think they were trapped between the activation period. You still have to wait for that 2-3 week zone after your booster before the antibodies rise to that level where your immunity goes into the 90% zone or your resistance. You can pick and choose your word, but essentially your body's better defended. So that is happening. But the hospitalizations continue to be mostly with the folks that are not vaccinated or immune compromised and vaccinated, meaning that you have, for example, an organ transplantee or you're a cancer patient or you have a severe immune deficiency, for example, OCDP, the respiratory
issue.
Yeah, COVID and things like that are, or actually the flu, and that will kill you. I mean, any type of respiratory issue will be challenging. And we all knew that going into vaccination. I mean, we all knew that it increases your protection. But, you know, if you got a severe condition, you already kind of at risk. It's just that, you know, the vaccines reduce your risk level. But I mean, I'm still hearing that Worcester County, in particular, UMass Memorial is at capacity or near at capacity for ICU beds. And don't be surprised if the DCU center comes back online at some point this winter as Sheffield Hospital again to do so. And we all saw in the Globe about the Endo-Bay sewer numbers are up. And the city in Boston in particular has moved to, I think, 5% infection rate for 2 weeks. You want to get a little below 1% at all times on a 2 week average. So people are more indoors. I know people are out eating. People are trying to enjoy their lives in Boston. It's good for the economy to do that. But this is also the alternative. You have risk. And even though you can have a go to live theater event, you know, people are like showing a vaccination card, which is great, but you know, some folks are also 2 week tests. You know, the time from the test and the time you show up, there's a time gap there. A lot of things can change.
Yeah.
And you saw in Vegas the concert, of course, now I thought it was a Phish concert in my mind, but you know, it became a super spreader. A New York Anime Convention had a super spreader now associated with the Omicron virus, which we're all still learning what Omicron. It's, you know, don't get too caught up on what you read just yet, because I still think there's another week of studies coming up that will probably give us more definitive. It takes about 2 to 3 weeks to get a kind of a good data set to see what's going on. It's in over 46 or 7 countries. It'll be well into 100 countries in 7 days where things are going with that one. And it's not just here. It's happening globally as well. The counts are up on a global level, very similar pattern to the U.S., in terms of the types of hospitalized infections. And of course, you have people break from infections that have mild symptoms. I know people have got the Delta variant and, you know, they were fine, but they were laid up in bed for a while. And, you know, frankly, folks, I have no interest in being laid up in bed as much as anybody else for 2 or 5 or 7 days.
Right.
You know, it's I'm not interested.
If it's avoidable. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and you've all ever seen me in public prior to COVID as I'm a walking illness during the winter time periods, because I will pick up everything in the air and I'll try to muscle through it. But given this type of disease, I don't have a strong interest in being a spreader.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I think it's, you know, not being talked about either is the workforce shortage is also impacting the healthcare industry. So that probably is, you know, is part of the struggle as well. Plus, a lot of them have policies where unvaccinated workers were let go. So there's that too.
There is that too. But I also remind folks, it isn't like this mass exodus of healthcare workers. We're talking about less than 1% of the healthcare workforce. Well under 1% healthcare workforce has either decided not to go back to work or were terminated for not being vaccinated. And this is the entire healthcare workforce. It includes everything from administrators to people in the front lines. So it's a very broad number. So people should not read into the fact it's strictly just doctors and nurses, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, it's true.
It's the whole, it's the whole workforce. And it's a very small number. You know, I do think it's important for healthcare workers to protect themselves. Vaccination is the way to do it, especially for people who have been in regular contact with people who have you know, the coronavirus, but also, you know, people that need care in hospitals and, you know, the idea of non-essential hospitalization care, you know, non-essential surgery essentially, is likely to end this month. You know, it's even more crucial to particularly healthcare industry to have folks vaccinated. And that includes dentists and optometrists, mm-hmm. you know, physical therapists. I mean, anybody that touches anybody up close and personal should be vaccinated.
Yeah. Do you think we should have more access to at-home tests, Tacky?
Well, we talked about this last time. I mean, one of the big Biden plans now is to give everybody free at-home tests. It is not unusual. This is a policy that's making its way around the globe to expand the number of testing available. Again, you still have to use a test kit correctly.
Right.
You know, read instructions. There, again, is a delay because it takes time for the disease to incubate to the point where you have sufficient a viral load that it could be expelled out of your body and become infectious. So there's a lot of caveats in terms of how to approach it. And, you know, it isn't, you know, a lab driven test in the sense that it's a PRC test. And you do have to do it a couple of times to ensure that it's either a positive or negative result. Mm. So, but I think it's a good thing to do overall because, you know, people that are traveling around, people aren't sure, maybe you got a sniff when you're a little bit concerned. Again, you know, the CDC, DPH, I mean, does it, your community health center, I mean, your local doctor, everybody has a symptom list. And it all looks remarkably similar to the flu. However, if you just got like a cold, sometimes a cold is just a cold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know you can now get a COVID shot and a flu shot at the same time. I think CVS is offering that, probably some other places too.
Yeah, I got my flu shot back in October. It's, you know, I try to get in before the flu season really shows up. Again, it's an activation period. I got my booster shot actually on the 22nd of November, really quickly after they announced 18 above could get their booster shot. So I did mix and match. I got Pfizer initially and got Moderna. The second time I wasn't going to sit around and wait for whatever comes, you know, just get whatever's available has been my advice. Sure. Doctor says, okay, just do it. And of course, get the flu shot. And of course, I remind folks, don't forget your shingles vaccine.
Mm, yes. Yeah.
You know, I think it's a good reminder to folks that you do have the vaccination. And my last physical checkup, I got my tennis vaccine.
Okay.
I was overdue for my rusty nail vaccine, so to speak.
There's a vaccine for pneumonia now as well. So, I mean, we have a lot of tools to protect ourselves.
Yeah. Again, please do consult your primary physician.
Honestly,
it's a good time to get your medical records updated. It's perfect time to do so. The COVID's become a very good reminder, even for myself, to look at my medication lists, you know, with my doctor and all kinds of other things, just to be sure we're properly up to date. Because God forbid you get ill, obviously, you know, they're going to go to the doctor's office for your medical records and want to be sure, you know, it's accurate.
Sure, absolutely. Were you able to attend any of the like the tree lightings in the city, Tacky, or other holiday celebrations?
Well, for people in House Neck, it did miss a tree lighting. I was trapped in line. Well, it's not really a good word to use trap, but I mean, I was in extended line for Joe Brew's wake. I thought it could get through the line quicker. Being elected does not give you privileges of cutting lines. Just to let you all know, folks. So it was very sad to see say goodbye to Joe one last time.
Yeah.
But I think people understand that sometimes we get, and not just me personally, but I mean all of us get caught up on other things. And
I know you were able to attend the Pearl Harbor ceremony, which was very nice.
Yeah, I made that on Wednesday morning. It's 80th year of Pearl Harbor as our greatest generation, special greatest generation of veterans start to move on. You know, it's still continually important to remember these, you know, remembrances, celebrate these remembrances, and remind ourselves of where we've been and where we're going through history. And, it was also good to see everybody. It was a bit of a chilly day, but it's, you know, it was a nice, you know, nice simple ceremony to remind folks of you know, a lot of sacrifices and the fact that, you know, we've been vulnerable before. We were proven to be vulnerable again. And all we can do is be diligent mm-hmm. To try to reduce the danger. But, you know, you can't predict the future and you can only anticipate so many things.
Yeah. I want to ask you about some international stuff and the whole Russia-Ukraine situation and how this administration is responding to that, Tacky.
Well, I think it'll be a little bit stronger response than the Obama administration. I mean, we all remember after the Winter Olympics, you know, the Russians kind of moved into Crimea. Was it Crimea? I can't enunciate this correctly.
Crimea.
You know, as soon as the paraplegic Olympics went off, no, Special Olympics. I keep getting these names mixed up. You all guys know it at this point, and I can't remember anything properly. The Special Olympics went off. The Russians kind of invaded a little piece of Ukraine and just didn't leave. And the Ukrainian president was pro-Russia and just kind of let them do what they want.
Right.
You know, just saying, folks, I mean, you got a president that has a little bit too of a love fest of a foreign power. These kind of things do happen. The Obama administration did not take a hard stance. The Trump administration just basically ignored it. Now the Biden administration is not going to ignore it. It's going to be interesting how it plays out, because NATO, the EU, the US, and every country in the geographic zone is watching this carefully, because if they do this to a UN member already taking a snippet off the edge, and they decide to go on full invasion, and it's pro-Russian presidency, who has more interest in Putin than his own country. This is not good in terms of in terms of how international relations work. And those of you who had Ukrainian friends, I came from Brandeis. There was quite a few Ukrainian Jews at the school, and they hate Russians. I don't forget, guys. This was like 1993. I mean, you know, when I was in college, and you know, I was few friends there, and they were Ukrainian. Wow, they really didn't like the Soviet Union. Really didn't like the Soviet Union. So obviously there's going to be a discrepancy between the general public and their government. And
People don't make that distinction sometimes, but that is a great point. Is that it's not the people, it's the government.
No, absolutely, and I think Putin's going to test, U.S. and all Western powers, if he tries to inch towards that border with a whole lot of troops that have no reason to be there, for a country that can't invade Russia, what the response is going to be. And I do believe it's going to be a much stronger response to the Obama administration. I do believe Biden is not going to ignore it like the Trump administration.
Yeah. Speaking of the Olympics, what do you think about the diplomatic boycott of the Beijing Games?
Well, it's good to know we're not alone. The Canadians, the Australians, and the British have decided to do the same action as the U.S. I suspect more democracies to do so under President Biden's unified democracy policy. They'll also coincidentally happen to be all very strong U.S. allies economically and militarily. So that's not surprising. I mean, we don't want to disenfranchise our athletes from participating in the games. They worked really hard to get there. COVID just screwed up everybody's schedule, as we know, as the Summer Olympics, and also everyone's training schedules on a global level. And this is their one moment to shine. And it's a long time between Olympics, and some people, this is only opportunity. So I think it was very smart for the Biden administration not to boycott the games. Not doing a government presence, in China, I don't think that's initially a bad move. I think the general public, honestly, kind of like, okay. But I mean, in terms of international community, working with our allies on an international level to keep on the same page about, free democracies and as I like to call it, regulated economies, because, it's not entirely a full capitalist structure. Otherwise, you and I will probably be likely living in a shed. It was a completely super capitalist structure. Probably regulated economies. To give everyone an opportunity to get ahead, should definitely be a priority for the world, particularly in our global markets and our democracies and so forth. So it's a good move. Like I said, it's going to get some international attention. I think this is more a show of on Biden's united democracy front. Will be interesting how many more countries do participate. What I'm actually extremely interested in is whether or not the political statements we made on the podium.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, the Olympic Committee strongly discourages any political statements at the podium when you receive your medals. We've seen in the past that people have made those statements. The most notable one is against apartheid in South Africa, particularly Black athletes, but also some white athletes, people forget that too, you know, made symbolic gestures from the podium. I'm very curious if anybody will attempt that in China. And also, if they do, what is the Communist Party response to that? Are they going to deport them right away? Are they going to detain them? A lot of interesting question marks on that one. Yeah. And we know these athletes are young. Many of them are very young. Many of them are part of our new social media age. And there's a lot of adrenaline, a lot of emotions. And they have their own beliefs and causes too, just like every single one of us. And whether or not they feel that this is their moment to do some kind of statement, we shall see.
Yeah.
And also COVID, like I said, Beijing and China whole is a zero COVID tolerant country. We saw what happened in Japan with just a COVID general before Delta really got rolling big. A number of infections of people come in that were fully vaccinated, but very mild symptoms again. Omicron has proven to be very fast spreading. Now, how much more fast spreading? It seems to be higher than Delta, maybe it looks like. I'm not sure. I mean, right. The scientists are kind of talking about it. So the science kind of comes up and explains more. I think the Beijing response regarding COVID testing, COVID security will be very interesting to watch. Very, very interesting to watch. Because you guys watched the Olympics during the Summer Games in Japan. You can see the other COVID protocols. We'll see how much access does the Chinese government allow the media to show us what's really going on and how they're handling this stuff. Those remember the Beijing Olympics in 2008, I believe. Mm-hmm. They did have media containment. You couldn't, the national media was not allowed to roam anywhere they wanted. And they made enormous efforts to improve the appearance of the city and try to create some degree of transparency for tourists and a whole lot of construction. But that was 2008. That was before Xi Jinping. It's now 2022 coming up. It's a different China.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see. I mean, the whole goal is to call attention to the human rights issues in China. I'd be curious to see if it has that success to do that.
Well, you got the Uyghur issue, which are the Muslims in the western part of China that's essentially being put in concentration camps. Number the 2 million is the Chinese attempting to do some form of cultural genocide, for lack of a better term. Mosques and burial grounds have been destroyed and removed. You can look at the BBC. Before China shut the Western media out, there's a lot of reports prior to that. Obviously, everybody knows about Tibet. Very complex political issue. A lot of history beyond what you all realize. If you look at the history of Tibet, it's very, very lengthy. Very lengthy. And, of course, the democracy issue in Hong Kong. They're having the first legislative elections this coming December, January, is it January? I think it's January. And, they've required all people to run for office to sign pledges to the government before they even sworn into the government. And also that any past acts will be held against you as soon as you sign this pledge. So imagine, folks, they sign a pledge and they find anything that was not a crime yet be now a crime now, and you can be put away for it. I mean, this is scary stuff, folks. It's very contrary to how we do things in the U.S. and actually most of the Western world. And there are, as a result, they're going to limit candidates immensely. So pro-democracy candidates are not going to be able to participate. A lot of the pro-democracy political parties have disbanded in Hong Kong. It's very clear that they're moving towards a so-called electoral college-ish style system, and also Carrie Lam, the CEO of Hong Kong. Notice the word CEO, not governor, not council general, not general counsel, not anything. She's called the CEO, treating like a corporation. Is going to be replaced and appointed by yet another electoral college, which is appointed by essentially Beijing. People may not remember the district counselors, which is really more of a constituent service, direct contact to people, where the pro-democracy movement won by almost 80% landslide throughout the island. Those guys are resigning left and right again because of the nature of these type of pledges. I fully expect 100% pro-Beijing legislative council. They're going to have a pro-Beijing CEO yet again. They've always been pro-Beijing CEOs, actually. and you know, we're going to see a more curto of freedoms. And the elect, by the way, this election should have occurred last year, but again, they all said because of COVID we can't do it. Now somehow the rest of us on the planet, including the Koreans, who are the first ones to have a major election in the midst of COVID, figured how to do this. So it isn't hard for us to draw our own conclusions what was really going on.
Yeah. Be curious to see. It might be more marches in the streets of Hong Kong. We'll see what happens.
I don't think you're going to see that. Under the new national security law that Beijing passed, Hong Kong is enforcing, and the courts, even though the British system court does follow the statute as provided by law, you know, it's going to be considered treason if you speak up against the government. And I have a hard time seeing a massive movement out there. I mean, right now they're trying to chase down people who did do the Tiananmen Square Memorial. And not just in Hong Kong. They're trying to find these folks on a global level now. They're very emboldened to do that. So, you know, I get it. When you go visit a country, you obey the rules. That's common sense. But when you're not sure what the rules look like and you visit the country and it isn't part of common sense, well, you can find yourself in trouble you didn't realize it.
Yeah, interesting. You mentioned genocide back home here. The governor recently signed a bill mandating the teaching of genocide in public schools. I didn't realize that it wasn't part of the curriculum already.
Well, as I've talked about in the past, a lot of stuff you don't teach in public schools, right? I am very skeptical of things like standardized testing because I do believe you should read, write, math, and have some basic general knowledge, what I call liberal arts type education. But at the same time, though, when you hyper-focus that curriculum towards a test, it takes away the opportunity for other types of education to be provided, prohibits kind of creative education and such, and would become kind of droned into a test situation. You know, I mean, I took the bar exam, folks. Your entire life is designed around a single test. I mean, that was a big part of my education requirement in law school. I got to be designed towards a test. So the legislature, you know, has been, you know, looking at a lot of changing our curriculum to try to broaden our education requirement. Genocide education is an example of that. I think people don't actually know what, I think less people know what genocide really is anymore.
Really?
As we move further away from World War II. But it's not just the World War II genocide of Jews, but also unfavorable people by the Nazi government, you know, gypsies and other ethnic minorities. But you also have, you know, the Cambodian killing fields, you know, which is a little more recent history in the 70s. You have the Armenian genocide by the Turks. That was really actually about 300 years ago now. And even, you know, conversation in the U.S. regarding the impact of Native Americans and Western settlement and, you know, how we treated Native Americans here. And even among Asian Americans, you know, the Americification, so to speak, of recent immigrants who, frankly, had very little civil rights compared to everyone else. You know, there's different types of genocide. People always think it's like mass murder. Well, it's a little more than mass murder. There's also things like cultural genocide. For example, when the Japanese occupied Korea in the early 20th century, it wasn't just a genocide of people, but it was the genocide of a culture. They were trying to wipe out the Korean culture as if it never existed.
Yeah.
And again, it's wiping out history. And we are living in the area, even the U.S., and it's not new, folks. Book burning is not strictly a Nazi thing. We did this here in the States as well. But, I mean, the idea of wiping out literature, wiping out ideas, wiping out, you know, many different people's thoughts in their lives, it was dangerous. And, you know, the genocide education is part of trying to stem that type of lack of knowledge. And we also still have a bill waiting around. We're trying to figure out whether we can do this as expanding our education to more cultural ethnic diversity education, where, you know, there'll be greater education on things like, you know, Japanese internment camps, for example. You know, I had a bit of a relation even in Quincy that people don't know that May is AAPI month, Asian American Pacific Islander month. I was still very shocked to find out that people don't know that it existed since Ronald Reagan on the federal level. And it's a part of the many different types of cultural and ethnic group recognitions throughout the United States and in Massachusetts. So, you know, give you an idea of another example of the lack of culture of ethnic education that's part of the conversation in the Hill as well.
Yeah, right. No, right here in Quincy, the schools are planning to hire a coordinator for equity, diversity, and inclusion. This is something that just occurred because of the walkout that happened at the high school last month.
Well, it's an interesting response to a problem, right? I mean, this is something that we've talked about before regarding the city council, you know, with its disagreement with the mayor regarding diversity and equity. It's kind of interesting. School system is like 2 years late or so on this conversation. Let's call it how it is, folks. If you read the news, keep track of the timeline, as well as the fact that we'll see who they hire. I mean, I do understand if Walker in there as the company that's doing some of the culture education, trying to do some evaluations of what's going on. But at the same time, though, you know, as I've said before, my frustrations, you know, the people running this administration is a lot closer to my age, and they should all know better. And you know, my expectations is I don't think that high. They all lived in a changing city as much as I have, and it's and this is Quincy, folks. A lot of our government administration, our locals, it's not like we have a mass, you know, influx of folks from like Medford, you know, or you know, so to, I'm just picking a random community, you know, coming into work in Quincy. I mean, most of our Quincy government is actually local Quincy people,
right?
So we'll see how it plays out. Yeah. I mean, and see where we take it from there.
Looking ahead, Jackie, is there going to be a Lunar New Year celebration in January, do you think?
There is going to be one. I've actually had a great conversation with Principal Ford at North Quincy High School, and they're planning to do some cultural education around Lunar New Year with the students and some performance and events, and Quincy Asian Resources will have an indoor COVID safety Lunar New Year come February. You know, I do encourage people to go, but again, you know, we encourage again to people wear masks, proper sanitize, keep your distance, you know, as much as possible. I know it tends to be pretty crowded, but it's exciting to actually celebrate Lunar New Year again this year. At Lunar New Year, as we get closer to Lunar New Year, we can do tacky cultural education in Lunar New Year the best we can. I mean, Chinese ethnic groups, Japanese, Koreans, Vietnamese, you know, celebrate the lunar calendar, which is following the phases of the moon. And the upcoming year is the Year of the Tiger. So about 6 or so weeks away from that.
Yeah, I know. It's hard to believe, but it's really creeping up quickly on us. It's just like the whole year seemed to fly by.
You blink and it's almost 2022. And I'll say this again as we close to the year turns, but I hope 2022 is better than 2021. Although my 2020 hopes were pretty dashed quickly when I said that in 2020.
Well, even the last pandemic 100 years ago took 2 years, really, before things were somewhat normal again.
Yeah, and there was no vaccination against that. And a lot of the practices of them trying to stem the spread of the Spanish flu at the 1918 pandemic is very similar to the techniques we're doing now, covering your face, keeping your distance, and trying to keep, you know, learn as you go regarding the science. The only difference is, you know, well into 100 years, 110 years later, we are much better at science than we were back then. And that is one of our biggest single advantages from the last major global pandemic, and even for epidemics. But the disadvantage, of course, is global travel.
Right. Exactly. You know, once something happens in one part of the world, you can pretty much guarantee it's going to happen all over the world.
And local infection rates are going up. But again, this is an asymptomatic. There's no not always clear warning signs that you're a carrier. You can be perfectly fine, healthy, and still carry. Again, masks continue to be an important part of our defense mechanism against COVID, and also the flu and the cold and the norovirus and so many other things. You know, I thank a lot of folks in the city that I see out there still wearing a mask, particularly indoors. I'm more comfortable wearing a mask indoors than outdoors, obviously. And again, I do encourage people to shop local if they can. If you're nervous, everyone can do stuff by phone and online. Mm-hmm. And buy gift cards for friends if you're concerned about delivery. And to be honest with you, if I don't think anyone's going to be that upset if your Christmas presents a few minutes late, 2 days late. I don't think people are going to be that upset with people over things like that. I think we've moved beyond that kind of behavior. But, you know, please do try to shop your local shops. I know some shops are franchises, but people in those shops also have jobs.
That's right.
And it's it's up to us to help people keep their jobs, meaning try not to get sick, because if, you know, 20% of your workforce goes down with COVID, you know, that's a different, that's also an additional workforce shortage, right?
Especially if you have a workforce of like 5 people. Yeah.
It's kind of like my office. Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
we've had conversations of what happens if one of us, two of us get sick, like really sick. And then, you know, how we're going to manage the committee load since it's so divided out. Again, this is, you know, this is a day-to-day concern. If you're an employer, your boss, your manager, you know, we all have that same concern, you know, regarding the impact on COVID.
This is the point in the program where you tell folks how to get a hold of you, Tacky.
617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. Please smash a button and you get a voicemail of one of the staff and we'll get back to you as soon as we can. Obviously, you can email me at tacky.chan at mahouse.gov, tacky.chan at mahouse.gov. Right now, I'm up to about almost 200 or so emails regarding the public hearing coming on Monday regarding the regulation of so-called body works. So I am working hard at sifting through my email right now, trying to take the testimony into different folders versus folks who are looking for help. But the Department of Unemployment Assistance continues to be the number one email and call I'm getting at the moment, continues to be the number one throughout pandemic about needing assistance on unemployment related matters. State Representative Tacky Chan, Facebook page. You might come watch me on a public hearing on Monday. Can't promise we'll be exciting, but you know, you can see me again if you want to. And of course, tackychan.org, we you know, keep some reference numbers for folks so maybe you can bypass calling us and find on your own. And of course, QATV, you can look at me in the past, you know, if you really care to. But also QATV has great public programming on other elected officials and government, city government officials and other not-for-profits and, you know, many other service organizations that can provide important information as well.
Absolutely. And we should point out that you're not wearing your seatbelt because you're not driving. You're just sitting.
Oh, yeah. No, there is no movement. Hands off wheel, folks. You do not hear the engine. I do not have an electric car. We're not running on sound. Trust me, you can hear the motor if the car's running.
Thanks a lot, Tacky. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. See you in a week or so.